the JFS gives more details on fisheries management plans, which are going to be the key way that we are going to manage our fisheries in future.
You know, what scope is there in the joint fisheries statement for that kind of pragmatism, that kind of flexibility to make things work, to do these trade-offs? Is there scope, or are we into a kind of mini CFP?
I think it will require industry to work much more closely together and to collaborate in ways that perhaps the industry has never really done before. As I keep saying, there are kind of 12,000 fishermen out there, and there are at least 15,000 views on a good day.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the second collaboration episode with the NFFO, the National Federation of Fishermen's Organisation. And this is where we'll be picking off some of the high-level issues that affect all of us across the UK. And after our first episode, where we unravelled some of the UK Seafood Fund earlier this year, it certainly didn't take long for something else to filter through and need digesting. So here we are with a very significant subject of the Joint Fisheries Statement consultation. The consultation document was published earlier this year, all 80 pages of it, and that sets out a whole new era for UK fisheries management. This is a really important framework. It basically replaces the common fisheries policy and will start to set the scene for UK fisheries management for decades to come. The consultation's open now until April the 12th, I believe, and DEFRA are seeking a wide range of stakeholders' input, feedback, views, ideas. So this episode is really an idea, is a way to unpick the basics, get the message out there, and encourage people to feed in and engage with the process. We originally put a call up to see if anyone had any specific questions on this, but probably jumped too soon. So this episode, we strip it back to the basics, welcoming on Barry Dees from the NFFO as a co-host, and Anne Freeman and Robbie Fisher from DEFRA, who are leading on this area of work. So that's enough from me. I'll hand the mic over to Barry to get things going. Over to Barry.
Welcome to Anne and Robbie. They're the people that have really been at the coalface in the development of all of this, running through from the Fisheries Act now into the next stage, which is the Joint Fisheries Statement, and then we'll be going into the fisheries management plans. I suppose the place to start is a really obvious question, which is, why does the Joint Fisheries Statement matter? Why is it significant? Maybe Anne, you could start with that.
Yeah, sure. So thanks, Chris, and thanks, Barry. I'm Anne Freeman. I'm Deputy Director of Domestic Fisheries and Reform in DEFRA. It's great to be back on Fathom podcast. Haven't done one for a while. Very much appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. And as you say, it's a big topic. It's quite hard to digest. And so we're thinking of lots of different ways of how we get out there and engage, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. So I think, Barry, to answer your question, in the Fisheries Act 2020, that I'm sure many Fathom podcast listeners will remember, we had 8 fisheries objectives. And they're sort of where we're trying to get to in terms of fisheries. And the JFS is basically a bit of a chart, like a chart to get to those objectives. So the objectives included the need to deliver sustainable fisheries, both in terms of the environmental impact, but also economics, and also the social aspects of sustainability. Some of the objectives also talked about the need for policies and management measures to be evidence-based and for fisheries to provide a national benefit. So the JFS kind of charts our progress towards how we're going to deliver those objectives. Importantly, means that although fisheries is largely devolved, all 4 UK administrations will be going in the same direction, even though sometimes we may go slightly different ways to get there, but we all intend to end up in the same sort of place, which is to deliver those 8 objectives. So all our future policies and management measures will have to follow the directions set out in the Joint Fisheries Statement. And that includes everything from steering our negotiation strategies in the annual consultations with the EU, with Norway, with our FMOs. But it also means that it will apply to our technical conservation measures as well. So everything we do basically from now on in fisheries will have to be guided by the JFS. So the other big thing I think that it's worth noting, important thing, is that the JFS gives more details on fisheries management plans, which are going to be the key way that we are going to manage our fisheries in future. And they are the way that we are going to move increasingly away from the common fisheries policy over time, with much more sort of local and engaged management, be it on stocks or areas, but I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit later as well. So that's it in a nutshell, Barry. It's easy. It's a chart. Thanks.
It's a chart. Thanks, Anne. Maybe one for Robbie. As Chris said, it's a big document, and the NFFO meets in a working group tomorrow to begin to develop our considered response. But you know, when you glance through the consultation document, there are words like MSY, maximum sustainable yield, and precautionary approach. That's used a lot. And I suppose under the common fisheries policy, this was the language of quite a kind of dogmatic application of the rules, you know, whatever the cost. And there didn't seem to be much room for pragmatism or flexibility. And I think it's true to say that fisheries management involves a lot of trade-offs when you're trying to get to various objectives at the same time, but it's not just like flicking a switch. So I suppose the question is, what scope is there in the joint fisheries statement for that kind of pragmatism, that kind of flexibility to make things work, to do these trade-offs? Is there scope, or are we into a kind of mini CFP? Thanks.
Thanks, Barry. And thanks for having me along today for my first ever Fathom podcast. I'm quite excited. As Anne said, the JFS sort of sets out the high level sort of direction of travel. Fisheries is largely devolved, so there's a lot of the actual kind of detail of this is going to be developed and delivered over time. In the different countries' waters. And certainly from the DEFRA side, we'll be wanting to have, conversations with fishermen and with the industry as a whole about what that detail starts to look like. We're going to need to, and we'll want to collaborate a lot, in the future on developing and delivering all sorts of different, reforms and management needs that come out of the JFS. So I think the answer is, Barry, yes, there is a lot of opportunity for, and a need for us to work together to get the balance right. The JFS sets the direction of travel, but there's, years and years of work for all of us together in developing the detail.
Okay, thanks, Rory. From what we've heard is that the JFS and fisheries management plans are going to be the UK's new approach to fisheries management. But what about where stocks are shared? And that's a lot of the stocks that we fish for are shared with the EU and other countries, but particularly with the EU, where relations have been a little bit bumpy recently. How does that work? How does domestic policy that we develop work in relation to those kind of international relationships that we're forced into because of geography and politics, I suppose.
Shall I take that one, Robin, then you can come in? So it's a really good question, Barry. And, you know, it's something that we are working through at the moment and we will have to continue to work through. But as you know, under UNCLOS, various of our international treaties, we have an obligation to cooperate with those with whom we share stocks. Fisheries management plans can be delivered jointly with other people, or we can use what we want to develop to help shape our position. And then we can go into consultations, discussions with, say, the EU. So for certain stocks, the trade and cooperation agreement talks about having multi-year strategies, which would be a way of jointly managing some stocks or areas. We're very keen to do that. But what is different from being in the EU is that we will be negotiating and discussing things in our own right as an independent coastal state. If we don't like what the EU or any of our partners want to do, we don't have to accept it. But I think, you know, we will be having to take decisions as we go through these things to work out what is best for the stocks, what is best for our industry, what is best for the environment, as to how much we collaborate, or how much we decide to just have our independent fisheries policy in our own waters. But it gives us the flexibility. So fisheries management plans, as I say, we can very much go down the route of doing them independently, or we can take elements of them and feed those into any negotiations or collaborations.
Thanks, Anne. That's interesting. So joint fisheries statements, the joint refers, of course, to the four fisheries administrations. The statement is agreement on a common approach. But when you get down to the nitty-gritty, especially against the background of politics between the different parts of the UK at the moment, what happens when politics intervene? Who is the final say in all of this? I'm not sure if this is for Anne or for Robbie.
Oh, well, it's a bit of an evil one. I'll take it. Despite the politics, all four administrations have worked together really well to produce that 82-page document. I think that's a really good indication of everybody's willingness and desire to do this. Nobody particularly has a, everybody has a veto, but we all have a statutory duty in the Fisheries Act to produce a joint statement. So I think that puts a lot of pressure on all governments and all ministers to make sure that they have abided by the requirement in the Fisheries Act, which they have all agreed to. Not saying politics won't get in the way of lots of things, but everybody is required to produce this joint fisheries statement, and all four administrations have worked really well together to get this first draft of the 82-page document.
I'm enjoying this. It's like a prosecutor cross-examining a witness, and you just move on to the next question. So the next one for Robbie, I mean, evidence is a big word in the Fisheries Act, and it's a big word here, an evidence-based approach, science-based approach. What's the significance of that? And is that a curb on ministers getting up in the morning and having a not-so-bright idea, which they want to pursue? How does it work within the context of the the joint fishery statements.
Thanks, Barry. Evidence is, you know, the foundation from which we need to build, you know, our kind of current and future management approaches. We know that the marine environment is a complicated, big place, and we have limited resources to spend on gathering, you know, the evidence that we need to make the right management decisions. I think the joint fishery statement gives us a real opportunity to kind of focus the resources that we have in government on using the money we have to answer the right questions around, you know, evidence. You know, we know that we need to know more about certain stocks, particularly non-quota species. And I think, you know, the direction of the joint fishery statement, for example, gives us an opportunity to really focus in on some of those big questions. I think it also gives us an opportunity to sit down together, government, industry, scientists, and have those honest conversations about, okay, where do we want to invest in, you know, invest in our resources to gather the right evidence. And the fisheries management plans, I think, we, you know, really offer us a kind of more coherent opportunity to and a place to do that. So the idea is that over time, we will sit down and say, okay, what are the challenges in this fishery and how do we want to collectively work together to address them? And, you know, sound science and the use of evidence is a, you know, is a key part of that, that picture.
Thanks, Robin. 82 pages. And within that, there are two words. The words are time-bound targets. And I suppose for me, there is some concern around that because we've experienced EU management plans that have had time-bound targets that aren't realistic in terms of the biology of the stock. You know, I think the scientists took the view that some of the early cod recovery plans that had time-bound targets weren't realistic because it takes biology to work. We see it similarly with bass at the moment, where it's going to take a little bit of time for bass to recover because it depends on incoming recruitment. You know, how does that work when you apply a time-bound target to it? Is that at all realistic? Is it at all in line with you know, what nature's timetable, if you like? The fear, I think, in the industry was if you don't meet your target, you're revisited with more punitive measures each time, and it successively gets worse. How can we avoid that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. Anne, do you want me to go? I will. we know that inflexible and unrealistic or unachievable targets don't help. You know, they're but I think I would also add that where they're used appropriately, they can be really helpful. So I think, you know, the reference in the JFS is to the option to have time-bound targets in FMPs. And I think it's important that where we develop those plans, we have the option to kind of hold ourselves all to account to the objectives of those fisheries. And in some cases, we might together decide that having a target to achieve for a certain policy, whether it's, you know, the recovery of a stock or dealing with a certain issue or achieving a milestone for, you know, gathering evidence might actually be helpful to achieving the aims of that plan. I think what we're worried about is having lots of plans which never get anywhere because they don't have direction. But I agree, you know, inflexible targets that are just locked in can, you know, can be really counterproductive.
And I think that the management plans are reviewed every 6 years, so you're not tied into something forever and ever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe one.
I think I could just add that, you know, there's a lot of debate about this. The JFS is a balance. We're trying to balance the needs and wants of industry, but also the needs and wants of the environment. And targets, I think, as Robbie said, we've got to be very careful about them. They've got to be well thought through and evidence-based. There we are, that word again. Also that there is a school of thought out there that suggests that targets are a good thing because it gives us something to aim for. And if we don't, we could just let things drift. And that's in nobody's interest. Everybody wants and needs healthy fish stocks because without healthy fish stocks, there is no industry. So as ever, it's a balance.
I think that's a really important word to keep hold of there, Anne. Thanks. Sticking with Anne then, a lot of words in here about co-management, collaboration, working together, which I don't think you'll find any disagreement from in the industry. But how do we make that concrete? How do we get that involvement of grassroots fishers in the design and development of fisheries management plans in particular?
Yeah, thanks. So those words are very deliberately in there because we have listened to industry and we have looked at best practice from around the world in terms of how to manage fisheries. And it is much better that fisheries are managed with the industry than fisheries management is imposed on the industry. So they have been chosen deliberately and after having listened to representations from NFFO and lots of others. So what does it mean? It is going to mean quite a big culture change in government and with regulators, as we have to be much more open in our policy making, sharing some of the problems and sharing some of the evidence with industry, but it's also going to require a massive change from industry and a massive commitment from industry because not just across the JFS, but also in fisheries management plans and other things that we're doing to reform fisheries management. We do want to work with industry, but we also recognise that lots of fishermen would much rather go out fishing than talk to government. So we have collectively got to find ways of working together, which, and as I say, ensuring that there is that time commitment from everybody to do things. I think it will require industry to work much more closely together, and to collaborate in ways that perhaps the industry has never really done before. As I keep saying, there are kind of 12,000 fishermen out there and there are at least 15,000 views on a good day. And, government won't work like that. We need to work more on consensus. So for the industry to be able to sort of pool its thoughts and communicate those coherently, I think there's a massive challenge for industry and for industry representatives, representative bodies like the NFFO, but also the fish producer organisations. And I'm very conscious that representation of the inshore fleet has been quite challenging over the years. And, we need to hear from all parts of industry. So, I've heard about some community interest groups being set up, which is another positive thing. But yes, we have somehow collectively got to get those 12,000 fishermen to have slightly fewer than 15,000 opinions on stuff.
Thanks, Anne. I think that's laying down the gauntlet for us to, as an industry, to try to speak with a single voice or at least with fewer voices. So we'll certainly be working on that. I think we're just about to run out of time. So from my point of view, I think I'd like to say thank you very much for those insights into the architects, the people that have been working really closely on this document that will be that will really shape our future in the industry for the next few decades, I suppose. I think we've only scratched the surface, though. There's a lot of discussion and thought really needed. So this is a very good start, but it is only a start. So with that, I'll hand you back to Chris. Thanks very much.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Barry. That's pretty well wrapped up, I think. I'll just come in with a final thought or question, more admin sort of process thinking. The Joint Fisheries Statement is a live consultation with a deadline of the 12th of April. So back to Anne and Robbie. Obviously, like Barry said, there's a working group starting tomorrow via the NFFO. We at the CFPO will no doubt be putting in our own response as well, and other well-organized groups no doubt will follow. Given that Fathom has a much wider reach than the Southwest, and obviously this is an NFFO collaboration, other people or fishermen or organizations out and around the coastline, what's the best way to engage with this consultation? I know that there's going to be some visits made from some of your team out to the coast, getting those sort of key side insights into this work. Is there anything you want to add to this conversation just to kind of make people aware of how they can feed into this consultation and get involved really from the start? Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. And thanks for your time today. So the consultation document is on our website. It's quite easy to find. I think it would be, you know, it's really, really important that people respond to that. We are going in March. We'll be around regional visits around England. Be really, really keen to talk to people on the quayside and, you know, across the supply chain as well. We know that people have limited time and aren't going to really want to read an 82-page document. So we'll be hoping through that process to get through to people. We're also, you know, to push it back across the table to you guys, it's really, really important that representative organisations from all over the country feed into this, and we'll be looking forward to and reading very, very carefully your responses, because this is really important. Also finally, this is not just a one-off thing. I think we're very much viewing this as the start of a very big and onward going conversation. I've been working from home from the end of my bed quite a lot for the last couple of years, and I'm desperate to get out and I'm desperate to talk to people face to face. And that's just a better way to do business. You know, we do have to go through the public consultation and website-y stuff, but we will look for all sorts of other ways of communicating with people. But as ever, we're always interested to hear from people about how we could do it better. We're not getting it right, you know, all the time. So, you know, it's very much a kind of like work in progress. But this is the start of the conversation, not the end.
That's great. Yeah, thanks, Robbie. That really helps explain all the avenues really to feed into this. That's good. We'll certainly look forward to seeing some of your team out and around the coast in the next few weeks and get that face-to-face conversation. I think the industry certainly welcomes that as well. If it's okay with you guys, we'll certainly come back and revisit this as things start to unfold.